the provision report must indicate, amongst others, the availability of suitable community accommodation for the occupied with the eviction. It must also indicate how the eviction will affect the personal rights of the person affected, for instance, education of the children, where they're going to be schooled, and then any hardship that suffered by the occupied. You will notice that as we go through the responses and comments, that is an issue that has been raised by other organizations with regards to the provision report. So maybe this is going to get to that point. The effect of an eviction order has had consequences which during the public hearing, we will hear people talking about, you know, how, for instance, their livestock are confiscated, how you consume them, how their buildings are demolished, and things like that. But the Act provides, in Section 13, for what the effects are of a lawful eviction. Firstly, that if the occupier has erected structures or made improvements on the building, he must be compensated for those structures by the owner. Secondly, if there are any outstanding salaries or wages, the owner must pay that to the occupier where at the end of the day the eviction is going to be completed. And lastly, the court may also allow, in terms of Section 13(1), the person to be evicted in opportunity to demolish the structure that they erected, or to tend to the crops that were already planted to be rooted and harvested. They must be given a chance to do all of that. And you have heard during the hearings that many people have been evicted and not given a chance to tend to the crops with the rooted and harvested, and similar kind of situations. There is also an issue of restoration after an unlawful eviction. This is a remedy that the Act provides in terms of Section 14, which from the common law perspective, it appears it's not a section that is relied upon in many instances with a view to remedy the hardships that the eviction could have caused. It provides that a person has been evicted or found to have been evicted unlawfully can apply to court for the following remedy. You can apply to court and ask for the residents or the building to be restored, go back on the land and live on that land, use it as well as using it, and have the demolished building restored. The person evicted also has the right to go back and repair the structure that has been demolished or damaged. And that if, for instance, he was employed, he has the right to go back and still provide those services as an employee of the employer. He also has the right to receive compensation for damages that may occur as a result of the eviction. And also has the right to claim costs of the application. Now, this is one area where I'm sure we'll all agree that because a lot of occupiers, almost all of them, are vulnerable, they may not have the strength to go to that extent of going to court now to seek a restoration. But that's where the department has to assist in terms of other processes that can pursue such work in the department. And lastly, the Act provides for patent applications for evictions where the owner can approach the court to circumvent the tedious process that I've explained, but there must be reasons for that, and the court has to consider that. And this is clearly indicated in terms of Section 15, what are those concerns. You can see that there must be some kind of imminent danger or the result of injury to person if an eviction is not immediately. And there is not any other way of achieve that is actually to be top up by the owner to give the ambitions immediately on that. And if also whether there are adequate arrangements being made to ensure that if the application does not succeed, the damage that the victim would have suffered is restored. That, Chair and Honourable Members, is in brief the context that are very important to provide before we deal with the actual responses, which you know as we go through them, that many of them relate to the issues that are tied to the Act currently. You notice that the A3 documents that we've been showing. Firstly, we group the comments in terms of the present we make them, and then lastly, I try to summarize the comments that I have and my colleagues also have picked up during the public hearing, many of which I attended. You notice that. That the last part appears to be highly summarized because some of the comments that are raised by the organizations were also raised by stakeholders in this particular. Starting with the comments from the Law Resources Center, you see that with regard to the definition, the comments have been the definitions of site, occupier, dependent, and permit. You will also have noticed that other stakeholders commented on those definitions. Starting with the definition of the site, the comment made is that the definition is narrow and therefore does not protect occupiers predicated. The specific reason they raise is because the definition suggests that the occupier must permanently be present on the farm. The comment is valid. And if you look at our response, we acknowledge that it may be improved. Of course, living on the side of the occupier than the owner. Because all these decisions, they are contingent in the sense that what the occupier is asking for is what the owner does not want. What the owner wants, not what the occupier wants. Now, we move from the premise that the Act provides for extension of security of tenure. So that's why we lean more towards the occupier than the owner, with a view to certain security of tenure. As I was saying, with the definition of the site, it can be amended. Of course, as a department, we no longer have the authority to decide whether to amend or not. It's within the committee's discretion to do that. We are simply indicating that that's a possibility that the committee can consider. But it may be amended to indicate that the physical presence that we're referring to the definition may be interrupted by factors such as impairment. For instance, the person may know the farm to be involved, but may be working elsewhere, maybe in the city or in the nearby town or visit, which also includes students, children who are not present who have business of age or still of school going, aging difficulty, but they're seven, but they're not on the farm permanently, so to speak. But there's also a court case that has affirmed this position, that physical presence are going to be continuous in the sense of everyday living out in the farm. Definition of occupiers, they are raising the point that if there is agreement or there's a need to amend that, the department should do that by way of regulation, not in the act or in between. The definition of dependent, we have the same challenges where the owners are saying the definition is too broad. There are many people who are not living on the farm, whereas the occupiers are saying it is narrow because it's not taking into account people who depend on us for other reasons. But what that comes later. What the LRC is saying is that they don't think we should define dependent because they think it's too narrow. And we think it must be defined because it is used in the act. Because if you don't define it, then we're simply deferring this definition to the court. Because if the attorney says that whether the dependent is dependent or not, whether we define it or not, the court will decide that. The court will give its own meaning. I think it's important that we can have it. And you will see as we go down how we propose it can be simplified. There's other people that are commenting on it. The definition of feminine, LRC is making the point that it specifically does not include certain who are living together but are not married. They're talking about partners. Because the definition talks about, persons who are married, it also talks about customary behavior. But that people can meet on the farm and live together and even have children, even though they are not common married. And that must be seen as some kind of family. And then our response is that. So we do not believe that there is anything wrong that prevents us or the committee from amending the definition, taking perhaps those persons of value. The comment I'm making again is that in terms of Section 82 of the Act, the owner may evict a person who has been dismissed from employment. This is the point that I made when referring to the employment relationship between the occupier and the owner. Now, they are saying that because in this instance, the reason for the eviction is the termination of an employment relationship. The determination of the ending of the employment relationship should not be left to the CCMA, but should be the subject of the court making a determination on the eviction itself. During the public hearing, we have heard people saying that a lot of our cases are with the CCMA. We don't know where the cases are, how far they've gone, we're not getting clear assistance. There's a lot of confusion about the relationship between the CCMA process and the eviction process, which is the point that the LRC is making. And we are saying as a response that the Section 82 and Section 83 can be amended to provide for that. But since it's a fundamental shift, it will be a fundamental shift to a family. Because now what it does is that it is taking away the determination on the lawfulness or otherwise of an eviction based on an employment relationship from the labor court to the landscape court that will be dealing with an eviction and not an employment relationship. So it's important to understand that. There is an issue that I got a sense of time, but a lot of challenges that were quite nice during the public hearing.
Before you process your answer on the definition, and I hear the technical arguments so that why you say the definition is not applied by what is there on this one matter. Suppose
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes. Thank you. Chairperson, yeah. My name is Bongiwe Lufundo. I'm coming from the office of the Chief State Law Advisor. I'm a principal state law advisor, and I assisted the department in the drafting of the bill, and I also certified the bill as being constitutional and in accordance with the legislative drafting principles. Being here, Chairperson, I'm here to assist the committee in processing the bill because I've got the background of being involved in an early stages. On the definition, just want to touch upon the definition of respite, dependent, and family. The definition of respite, as it's defined in the bill now, it means to live at a place permanently. This definition has been contested by the stakeholders on the basis that it is limited. A person must actually be in their place of residence. It doesn't take into account factors such as employment. I do agree with the proposal from the department that this definition should be amended so as to also cater for the persons, like the suggestion as it stated there. It should take into account the fact that physical presence may be interrupted. So I've noted this definition if the committee agrees with the suggestion from the department. The definition of dependent, the chairperson, is linked with the with the definition of family. A dependent has been defined in the bill. Dependent means a family member whom the occupier has a legal duty to support. The definition has been contested on the basis that it limits the definition to the member, a family member whom the occupier has a legal duty to support. The contestation is mainly on the usage of the words a legal duty to support. I've noted from the department their submission in this regard. However, I would like to caution the definition of dependent must not be separated from family, because in the definition of dependent itself, you make a reference to a family member. For the purposes of the challenge that has been raised, we can simplify the definition to mean a family member of the occupier who relies on the occupier for financial support. And you are trying to make it more flexible. And then you go to the definition of family, and then you state there who are these dependents. Instead of saying who has a legal duty to support, I'm proposing that it can be the committee should consider to remove the legal duty, that obligation of a duty to support. Instead, it should replace it with the dependent must be financially dependent on the occupier. Linked with that is the definition of family, as I was saying. Family is defined as the occupier's spouse and includes its spouse in the customary marriage, whether or not the marriage is registered. It's a child, including adopted child, it's a grandchild, it's a parent, and it's a grandparent who are dependent of the occupier and who reside on the land with the occupier. You see also in the definition of family, they are making a reference to the dependent to say, all of these categories of persons must be dependent of the occupier. Chairperson, in considering the definition of family, there was a suggestion in this regard is that it must also cover partners living together. We support that submission that it should also cover the partners who are living together. Chairperson, with regard to this definition, Chair, I would like to refer to a case law. I would love the committee to be very considerate when they are addressing this issue, having regard to what has been stated from the public submission. There was a recent case law whereby the Constitutional Court attempted to define. The Constitutional Court considered what constitutes family for the purposes of Section 62D of the Act. In Section 62D, it's important that what is talking about the rights of the occupier. Section 62D, Chairperson, make a reference to, just a second, let me check my mind. It's important that we also look in terms of that section, because the court was trying to define what constitutes family for the purposes of that section, because the Act at that stage didn't have a definition of family. Section 62D grants the occupier a right to family life in accordance with the culture of that family. That's what is stated in terms of the Act. However, Section 62D states that this right to family life shall be balanced with the right of the owner or person in charge of the land. What happened in this judgment, Chairperson? The court said the right to family life should not be limited to the nuclear family, which is a spouse and children. It may be extended. And what is stated there, it said families come in different shapes and sizes. Therefore, there's no need to attempt to define family with any precision other than to say that it cannot be limited to nuclear family. It's been stated there. However, the emphasis I'm trying to make, the court said, the extent of family in any specific set of facts will depend upon striking a balance. There must be a fair balance between enabling the occupier their right to enjoy family life and also enabling the owner of the land also his or her right as the owner of the land. The definition, as this is stated now in the bill, Chairperson, it has been extended. It's not limited to only a spouse and children. It's been extended to include a grandparent, to include a parent, to include all of those factors which are mentioned in the bill. It's a grandchild, it's a parent, it's grandparent. And in our view, Chairperson, when we certify the bill, we believe that this definition is striking a fair balance because it doesn't extend to the extended family and so on. It's all of these people who are listed in the definition, and all of these people must be dependent on the occupier for support. Thank you, Chairperson.
But I would still suggest that instead of using the word money, we should rather say social needs, because social needs did not all come via money. From a little plot that the parents, so to speak, that they're cultivating, they may be able to feed their dependents, and there's no money involved necessarily. If we say social needs, then we cover everything. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I have a question on this definition of desire. This is here, thanks to the fact that physical presence may be interrupted. Is there a limit to that? So if someone works on the farm, let's go and work somewhere else for 5 years, and when you come back after 5 years, but you then still say you are legal and right. I'm trying to understand it. I'm, unfortunately, I wasn't part of the program from the beginning. That's the first question. And then finally, Chairperson, is there no definition of family somewhere else that is already in legal documents that, that can be taken to this piece of legislation? I'm sure you can't just have for every legal document that you write have a different definition for family. So I'm just trying to find out if there's no standard definition that, that's been used, and do we need to use that then standardly for legislation? I'm just asking.
Chair, I'm partly covered by the study. I would certainly like to get the definitions that were given to us in writing. And I'm also thinking, I'm very concerned when we start as often legally lay people trying to come up with definitions ourselves, and then we might run foul of common law legislation, other legislation. So I think it's going to be very important that, that whatever definitions that we come up with are legally well-founded and consistent with other legislation is what I think. But what we don't want is a situation where different bits and pieces of legislation contradict one another and it could have unforeseen consequences.
Thank you, Sir President. In Section 8.5, I think I can see
or social worker will come in, try to find placement as a family member, as the first option. So I'm saying there's not a history of dependency between them, so that's now a new dependency that I have been created. I'm saying that the legislation that is currently technically stands to outlaw such a practice from Britain, because it does not provide for that. And one would feel much more happy that if such a provision is made, it will include a child in foster care.
Let me first agree with the, perhaps we should delay the question, but he made an principle quite honorable three times. The issue about money is problematic. 5,000 today, in 15 years' time, that 5,000 is where it was. So you can't pin down law from where I sit. I know nothing about law, but from where I sit, I know some little bit about logic. It doesn't make sense. 5 years down the line, 5,000 is meaningless. So they have to amend all the time. So all I've been done is that when the committee sits at the end, it should consider taking out rand and cents in the law. I think perhaps that's the point. Chair, the only other, perhaps it's not coming to your point, Chair, but it's fine. I'm not aware if in the room we've got Salman Africa. I would argue that in my little 15 years close to experience, it is very dangerous for us to tread, perhaps close to our Walter's point, tread as public representatives, not necessarily to be legally qualified. There's no such a need. To then on our own interchange and interact with the legal minds, because it means we are underrepresented. But in principle, we know exactly what we want. But so that's just one point. I may just maybe it's a lament, Chair, but I wouldn't mind going into record, and I know I'm on record. And perhaps Chair, last thing, perhaps we have a nice for the state law advisors to have perhaps also had a column here. Because now I'm trying to cross-reference the points made by LRC, the department, and the state law advisor, and I find myself at times having to think who was making this point because of that situation. But having said that, Chair, the extended family, if I got this form well, it looks like the scope is being closed there. And when the committee sits there, I'll be arguing very strongly that we cannot close it. We come from African families. We take a family's child, and even without the adopted child, which I support also, but the extended family, don't you understand? You know? So I don't know if I got you well this morning. Then I was asking if it could have been possible to make Tater to put your comments as well, and like you are making now. So the extended family, I don't mind other existing law. I do know that all law is in constant change and motion. And therefore, if existing law excludes and victimizes people, then that law, that's why we have lawmakers at a different level, at different times, as committee chair, would then be making amendments to suit the social, political, and economic realities of transformation. So the extended family, I'm putting it as a question. Did I pick you up correctly to be saying that you don't mind excluding that? And are you sure about that principle?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to add as well to some of the questions relating to the family court. I agree with some of the members that speak of children that are not legally adopted, and they should be included in family. I think we need to realise the circumstances of life out there,
yeah,
and know that we can't rely on a piece of paper in a situation where a kid has lost his parents to illnesses, whatever the case may be. And I know how the culture goes: is the grandmother needs to look after it, or the uncle or the aunt needs to look after the child. So in this instance, I definitely think that with regards to the constitutional ruling you were speaking of, where they the constitutional court ruled basically a 50-50 agreement under what family is and what do they define as family. What does the labour law say about who is family when a compensation leave or leave of compassionate leave is required? When somebody in the family has died, and if that person's working, what does the labour law say about what determines family over there? If you understand what I'm talking about. I know the labour law is actually quite strict on that, but they say, well, it's only immediate family that you can apply for compensation, compassionate leave for. So as Honourable Walter said, would there not be a clash with the labour law and with what we're trying to achieve now today?
I think it would be useful for the committee to actually look at other legislation and other legal definitions of family, because we're focusing on the definition of family, and I think that will be useful for our further deliberations. There's also another way we can look at this, and it's obviously we're talking on the definition of family, but it might be useful to also focus on the nature of the relationship. So rather than get ourselves defining family, looking at what the relationship is between the occupier and whoever whether there's a demonstrably dependent relationship, might be a way of getting around it as well. But I think the key thing is what we're trying to achieve is no harmful impact on people that have a demonstrable bona fide relationship of dependency on them, and that's what we're after. So I think it's an issue of definition. And I also think that would be my request. Are there court findings, legal precedent in this regard? Secondly, is there possibly a list of the definition and other legislation? I think that would be very useful for us.
Before the
The definition of respite, if I understand the question correctly, I would say we should read that definition in context with the Act as a whole to see where that word is used in the Act so that we can get an understanding as to whom does it apply. Does it apply to the occupier? Does it apply to the dependent, which is the children or the spouse? So we'll need to read the Act as a whole so that we can get that understanding. So I won't be able to address that without considering exactly to whom does it apply to, unless the department can answer to that. On the standard definition of family, Chairperson, the members were saying if I were to understand, we should consider other laws. We should get to see if there's no standard definition, what is the guidance there. Chairperson, it must be understood that each and every piece of legislation is different. When you define a word in a certain legislation, you define it for the purposes of that law. For the purposes of the ESPA, it means this. For the purposes of the Labour Act, for the purposes of any other law, the pension laws, it means this. In the pension laws, it's limited to the immediate family, which is the nuclear family, your spouse and your children, same as with other laws. And also the Labour Relations Act, I'm not sure, I would assume that it's also limited. So what I'm trying to say, Chairperson, the legislation is different, it will different from legislation to legislation. So we cannot say we must seek a guidance from the other legislation. Rather, we should focus for the purposes of this act, what we're trying to say. When we define family, because we're using it in context with this, you see that word, where is it used in the legislation, which is the ESPA? Where is it used and what is it trying to achieve? Whom are we targeting when we define family? Are we inclusive of everyone or is it limited to the definition as it's presented in the bill? The other question that arose was the extended family. Yes, Chairperson, what I was trying to say is we try to seek a guidance from the courts, what the courts are saying in this regard. And the Constitutional Court has pronounced itself as far as to what constitutes family. And paragraph 37 of the judgment, I think I should just quote that. From the judgment doesn't try to limit the family to the immediate family or to anyone. It's open. It's open-ended. At paragraph 37, the court is saying, living a family life may mean that the occupier is living with his or her spouse or partner only, or living with one or more of his or her children, or with one or more members of his or her extended family. So what the court is trying to say is the family is open-ended. You mustn't try to limit it in any way. But however, when you consider that factor, it should depend. You must try to strike a fair balance. You must strike a fair balance between the rights of the occupier to family life and the rights of landowners. So that's the emphasis that the court has made in this regard. It doesn't limit, you can include extended families, but the facts of the case will depend on a case-by-case basis. And most importantly, it mustn't limit the rights of the landowners. And in this case, the finding of the court was, they considered a number of factors to say in trying to get what is just and equitable in the circumstances. And then at the end, the court stated that it excluded the adult children. They were excluded from the definition. And also the only person who was authorized was the minor child. But however, that was depending on the circumstances of the case, because that land was needed for another employer who was new. So it was needed for something else. So they had to consider those factors as well. I'm not sure if clarified.
Post-colonial society then inherit this method of measure. Now, the definition there for following now, in this field should be understood in the context of a
PC was to explain what the comments are saying, and then how the definition can be amended. The committee has to amend that. So we didn't get to a point where the child should amend according to the comments, hoping that if the committee, for instance, in principle, agree to amend, for instance, the definition of dependence in accordance with our response. For instance, in our response, we are saying that if we get on the first page, the in our response that on William Point 3, on the it says the word is used in the act, it is important that it be defined. However, we are saying it may be reviewed. That is, if the committee decides to amend it to provide for other disabilities such as social support or preservation of family relations, which is some of the comments made by persons who made the comments. Now, if, for instance, the committee in principle decides to expand it to take into account social support and preservation of women, then we know that the committee has agreed to define it. Then we go back and try to convert the definitions together with the question, so that next time we come up with definitions that we can explain better together with this. This will define further define. Finally, this will further define family. Yeah. That's the push throughout. That we say it may be amended, it may be reviewed, depending on how the committee decides. Then we let the money go and try to go. It applies to the definitions as well as the substantive provision, as it says, so we go for the motive such. And that's the point that I think is correct. That we believe that the committee will, in principle, decide whether to further amend or not. If it does, then our mandate will be to go and look at the definitions now, take into account case law, what other acts are saying, what the social contract produced to be the correct definition, then we come back to say this is how it defines in accordance with what we believe the community should be defined.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just on that sheet. Because we want to discuss at the level and understand you at the level of principle. And then our own legal, sorry for that, and we're not alienating your good selves, but you'll understand the principle of separation of power. Our own legal would have needed to listen to us and your responses and then come to us with the appropriate. But in the circumstances, I think we should welcome the willingness on the part of the legal section in the department and the state law advisors to really try to, because the main issue is the people who are telling us that they cannot wait the current ESTA is the basis for their repudiation, or as they're going to like to agree and say the way of putting it. And therefore, we can't wait much, but thank you for your willingness to. But I just thought, Chair, I must clarify myself in case the legal people in the room feel that they are not welcome. You are most welcome. It's just that ideally from the point of separation of power. But we're all about the same people to try and alienate and elevate the strife there. You know, I don't know about other definitions, but committee will have its own discussion and deliberation. Thank you very much.
Chair, my apologies if I'm repeating myself, and maybe I should put it a bit more strongly. I entirely understand that there's different contexts and different legislation around the notion of family, but would it be possible if I can make it a formal request to get a set of such definitions for us as a committee to help us in our deliberations? I think it will, can only be helpful. And then I would like to also repeat that we are possibly spending a lot of time on the definition of family, when we should be looking at what is the nature of the relationship of the person that should be benefiting from this. So maybe that's what we should be defining.
Thank you.
basically bring 100 definitions of a family, but we need to look whether that definition is in line with ESTA, with what we want to address with regards to ESTA. So the only thing is that we need just to agree as members that we agree with the proposal, let them go back and just try to, you know, to define the family in a manner that will be in line with the amendment that was given. I think there was also an issue that has been raised by Honorable Sultana and supported by Honorable Nguyen. I think we agree with it. That, what was it? Yes, the issue of the rights and sense. The financial needs. Yes, that must be socially, not must not be based on the financial aspect, but it must be based on the social aspect rather than on the financial aspect. Honorable Sultana.
In concrete terms, may his spirit rise and pursue. Remember, Chair, when the late President Matimba was sitting with the spouse then and the Archbishop to them, said, so decide, are you married or not? And we now subscribe to that. So, but I'm just saying, Chair, that's a higher profile such case. It is, eh? It was in public space, yeah. So that's the highest profile such case. But I read, Chair, on your point, the department to be responding appropriately. No, I think that's what they are saying there, that definition may be expanded to include the unmarried partner. I think with that response, Chair, then the committee at the end will then sit and probably take a chance. But I'm happy that they were listening well to the point. Keep it, Chair, comes from keep and then eat. So I think gender activists will have a problem with the keep it in there, because it means the one who's kept is eat, you know, and keep it. Maybe it could be keep him or keep her.
Thank you.
Chair, to some extent also that the Minister covered what I wanted to say. I think there's also a risk of over-defining something and trying to import every mutuality and then we end up confusing it. Just in terms of what Linda Tabeleng said, of call it malicious manipulation of financial cattle, there might also be a way when we get to the committee deliberations to be that, again, we don't want to take one part of legislation and compare it to another part and lose the context. I take that point, but that would be in effect something similar to a constructive dismissal. So I think we need to look at what is the underlying principle in other legislation. If somebody willfully and deliberately do that in order to evict somebody, then that to me is that would be unethical as well. At the same time, we also must be very careful to make the mistake of you don't have some benchmark in terms of the financial rate or some starting point that it might also create problems. And I would suggest we look at it from that point of view when we get to the deliberations of the committee.
We've got a good sense that we need to
take into consideration. With the Legal Resources Center, I have already talked about the comment on Section 82 with regard to where the basis for occupation is an employment relationship between the occupier and the worker. I talked about that and how I think the committee may be because they were saying that. Where the relationship is an employment one, when the occupier is dismissed by the owner, that automatically leads to an eviction. The comment is that should not be the case. Rather, when there is a dismissal that leads to an eviction, the determination on the correctness or otherwise of an employment relationship must be dealt with as part of the eviction procedure. That's what I said. We're saying it is possible to, as I was saying, it's going to be a fundamental shift in our approach, in that we will be taking away the right of the CCMA to determine labor relations issues and then bring those issues to the residents court where they define different eviction. That's the choice that the committee has come to. But we are proposing that if there is a route, it chooses, that's how it can be done. Section 9, which is another comment, Section 9.3. court can only consider an eviction application after receiving a consent order. I indicated when I was explaining the content that that's what the Act provides. And the way the Act is written, it says the court must consider the court. However, it does not say that if there is no report, the process will not be proceeded with, which is some of the comments that is also from the court, that they are basically saying when there is no possession of the court cannot make a determination on an eviction application. So that's the point. As we're indicating, we're saying the exception can be amended accordingly to make the consent mandated by the court. We understand and we have heard during the public hearing that the instances where the court, sometimes when they consider eviction application, they ask for the reports are not forthcoming. It is that they proceed nevertheless and make determinations without taking into account the issue that the Act they must be taking into account before issuing an eviction. So it's for the committee to decide whether it wants to make the consideration of the court mandatory. Section 8.4 and section 8.3 deal with the point that I made earlier during the presentation of the contract with regard to the application for eviction, that where the main occupier, so-called main occupier, dies, the dependents are given 12 months within which to leave the farm. You will note that what we are suggesting is that if the dependents want to continue to reside on the farm, and for instance, they want to continue to provide labor, they still want to continue working on the farm, it should not necessarily follow that after the death of the main occupier, so that I think we believe that position can be that if they continue to work, they desire to continue to work, they should not necessarily, as a result of the death of the main occupier, be evicted from the farm. The other thing saying that section 6.2 of the Act, where we talk about the occupier having a right to maintain the building. Maybe the way the provision has been in the bill, they suggest that it's an obligation, whereas we see it as a right. I think that's the way to say. Instead of saying, may take measures to improve or renovate water, we say they have a right to do that. I think that's the way. That we don't see it as an obligation, we cannot see that. We see it as a right of the occupiers to renovate or change whatever, to make the building better. There is a comment again on the land management board and the land management committee. They're basically saying that in the main, that the functions that are allocated to the board and the committee, they see them as duplicating the functions that are currently performed by the department. And they're saying that we must do it. And you notice that in our response, we are making the point that the board and the committee are not performing the functions of the functions of the department. They do not have offices and staff to be doing things that the department is doing. they are mainly misunderstanding, meant to be consultative, interactive, and advisor group that works together with the department from the ground to ensure that the remote presence are critical. The other point they're making is with regard to land tenure grants that are not sure how this will benefit occupiers, because they're making the point that they believe that these are meant to benefit more owners than occupiers. We don't believe that. We think the way the bill is written, it covers it. I think the main, it provides for more protection to occupiers.
No.
They are making the point again with regard to tenure grants that they must be used to leverage a better tenure right for occupiers. We you will see in our response that we tend to agree with that. And I think that's the intention, that tenure grants are supposed to strengthen tenure rights for occupiers. And the last point the act is making is with regard to reference to the things that I think that's the important that for the old terminology that we should have. So that will be deleted to refer to the MPGP financial ordinance, the background, maybe it's clear that people would like to mention or something like that. So that was a lot.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your response to the confusion that is raising in that H2 and H3. And I hope that we will come back with your written proposed solution. It will be welcome. It was indeed, it was bothersome that dependents of a farm worker, the security of their tenure would be dependent on the thin thread of relations, work relations between the main occupier and the employer. Because we have come across a large number of cases of constructive eviction. Remember one case when one employee reported to the doctor, went to the doctor because he was sick. And then when they came back to his job the following day, the employer said that they know you were drunk, I'm dismissing you. So there is not in a case like this, not even a threat of security of tenure. And then the whole family would easily lose what they regarded as their home. So we really need to be very, very refined in distancing, work-related, potential dismissals from the right of the people to be on that piece of land. We will have to find and factor into this piece of legislation something that separates, the two totally. Otherwise, we will not be talking about securing tenure of land by the people who are dependent on the very person, on the one person who is actually employed. We've got to make it very, very specific in the way we define that relationship. I just thought I should make the point by way of emphasizing the importance of separating the two. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chief. Just 2 points, Chief. Chief, one area I think one of you concerning was saying, Martin, that I am having a concern with the supplementary income. It's a right. One could probably refer to it as short retrenchments. It relates to the change over of ownership. We have had people, taking to us, they were living quite happily, working on a farm. Then the farmer comes to them and tells them that he has sold the farm. He introduced a new owner, and suddenly, after a day or two, the new owner then wants them to leave. And the old farmer gave them money, because I think there was one incident where each family got 10,000 rand, and they were extremely grateful for that 10,000 rand. But accepting that 10,000 rand resulted in them leaving. They were not asked to leave by the old owner. The new owner, in actual fact, asked them to vacate, because he doesn't need them. He's not going to use them on his farm. They have to do some provisions made to counter those kinds of as I'm calling, soft retrenchments, Che. Importantly also, Che, or the next thing, Che, is it has to do with a probation report. I would want to agree with LRC that it has to be mandated, Che. Currently, I think the one section is in the current act speaks of the fact that the municipality and the department must be informed 2 months before the time of an eviction. But that's just for information. That's all. That is a problem. It cannot just be for information. There has to be, the department has to play a particular role. Indeed, I do not know, Honourable Minister, whether the department has currently the capacity to provide professional reports to the court. Have they had an initial DG of doing that, Chair? That is something to consider that I'm having, Chair. But I believe that a probationary report should be amended to one, Chair, in order to protect the provider.
I think that's a very important point, because I think if you don't be talking about probation reports, and probation reports are not forthcoming, it's going to harm the interests of everyone concerned in the process. So I think that there's a very definite obligation that this proposed bill is putting on the department. I think there are some capacity issues there that I think would really create a message if it's not. Also think with the issue of, and certainly that's what I understand, the issue of tenure rights. A part of what we're dealing with is essentially inherited rights that are not necessarily recorded. It's not clear in a contract law. Now there's two ways of dealing with it. One is they're saying that you must separate it from the employment contract. I don't think it's something that I think it's going to differ from area to area, but it's also another way of saying, if you're looking at it and say, if you actually want to encourage that it's in writing, that it's clear, that it is easily dealt with and demonstrable in the court of law. So I think we must be very careful to I think it's something we need to give careful consideration to before you start separating contract law and tenure rights. There might be an alternative approach to it that can achieve the same objective. So I think we need to debate that as a committee.
Chairperson, before you close on the LRC, I just want to pitch in for clarity purposes. Section 8.2, it's been stated that Section 8.2 provides for the right of the owner to evict an occupier who has been dismissed from employment. And if we read Section 8.2, it's stating basically that. But however, Chairperson, I would like to clarify the confusion that is seemed to be created. The LRC is stating from this that any dispute relating to dismissal is dealt within the Labour Relations Act by the CCMA. It is proposed that the determination for eviction, even in dismissal cases, be dealt with and be made by a court as an ordinary eviction application. This is exactly what the Act is saying. The Act doesn't take away the power of the court from dealing with evictions. Only a court of law can deal, who can deal with eviction processes. What Section 8.2 is saying, in sub 3, any dispute over whether the employer, as the employer's employment has been terminated, shall be dealt with in accordance with the provisions of Labour Relations Act. What this subsection is trying to do is trying to make a distinction. Sub 3 is dealing with the dismissal. If there's a dispute in relation to the employer, employment relations issue, then that one is dealt with by the labor, in terms of the Labour Relations Act. The eviction is dealt with in terms of this Act. And this is clear, you can see from Section 10D, which is saying the same thing, is linked with Section 10D of this Act, the ESPA. Section 10D is saying, is specifying the ground for eviction. 10D of the ESPA Act is specifying the ground for eviction in terms of this Act. An order for eviction of a person who was an occupier on 4 February 1997 may be granted if, and then you go to paragraph B, if the occupier is or was an employee whose right of residence arises solely from that employment and has voluntarily resigned. So what this means, it means that the ESPA will still apply in those instances where employment has been terminated. They will apply ESPA, not the Labour Relations Act. The Labour Relations is involved in the event of a dispute. It should be dealt with in terms of that Act. That's the clarity that I'm trying to make. So this, the statement is seen to be misplaced to say, because it's already dealt with, there's no confusion there, and there won't be need for amendment. But however, Chairperson, what is needed, what I think that the committee needs to be clear of, the Act as it is now is making a distinction between the occupiers. The occupiers who are residing on the land, mainly on the basis of employment, may be evicted where that employment relationship has been terminated. It's been made in the Act. There is a distinction. Whereas any other occupier have a right to reside. That's a security of tenure issue. They reside and stay there as long as they wish. That's a distinction that has been made in the Act. I want to get now what is the intention on the basis of the issues raised. Is the intention now trying to say, even if your employment has been terminated, you must still reside on the premises, even though the agreement between yourself and the owner was mainly that you must reside on the land because of the employment. When the employment has been terminated, then you are to move. That is what the Act is saying. So I want to get the understanding. Because the response that I get from the responses is that the amendment will have to, the Act will have to be amended. And the amendment, what is this now? The amendment will ensure that the tenure right of an occupier is not simply terminated by dismissal. That's the clarity that I need the committee to get. They must have this understanding. The Act, as it was enacted in 1997, it made that distinction. If the legislature now want to take away, if the legislature through these amendments, they don't want to limit the right of occupiers who are residing on the land because of their right of residence is linked to their employment. If they want to expand now to say, even after the employment has been terminated, you must still reside on the land, there must be clarity in that regard when the committee is considering and deliberating on the bill. Thank you, Chairperson.
Is it the intention of the department to deliberately exclude or unintentionally exclude retirees There's no reference to retired persons. There's a reference to dismissals, dismiss people, as well as the people who resigned. I didn't see any reference to retirees. I may have missed it, but certainly on that 2 pages, there was no reference there too. And we've come across a number of cases where people, you know, go on retirement. There's nothing, no right to occupy and so on. Can you help me, you know, in that regard?
That we, in our response, we are saying that the issue raised by the the speaker that she wants to understand what the consent is, which leads to her response. And the consent is this. The LRC is saying that people are complaining that when a person who works on the farm, and the basis for him being on the farm is the employment relationship, what happens is that immediately the owner dismisses the worker from employment, that automatically leads to conviction. Now, they are saying employers are using employment relations to evict occupiers. Now, they are saying that should not change. Instead of, that should rightly say that subsection 3 of section 8 talks about the dispute in relation to employment being dealt with in terms of labor relations. That is what the Act provides. But people are saying that's the problem. Because what then happens is that people are evicted. And then you hear that the CCMA is dealing with the case somewhere. And there's no end to that labor relations issue. Because you have an issue where an eviction is justified by dismissal. And dismissal is dealt with not in the labor, not in the land claims court. It must be dealt with in the CCMA in terms of the labor relations. And I think that's the problem. Instead of having the dismissal, which is a different type of section 8, dealt with at the CCMA separately, let it be brought together and build up, be dealt with together with the eviction process in terms of the airport. I, from my extent, I sympathize with that concern, that it can be done. But like I indicated and explained it, that we're going to represent some fundamental change in the way we live in this way. That what appears to be on the face of it, the labor relations issue that is dealt with at the CCMA, to be brought, to be dealt with in terms of EFSA by the land claims court, because that termination of employment is used as the basis for conviction, which is an issue in terms of EFSA. That the point has been true. I'm not sure that can be. I mean, like I said, we don't have a position. With the portfolio committee, we are simply saying that it can be done. If there is a decision that was, we can assist in terms of how that can be done in the case.
That's
agree
that.
Part of the requirement, and it doesn't happen, then what?
can someone then go to the court to tell the department within 2 days or 5 weeks or how many months, and then it still doesn't happen, and then what? Then it's a blurring of between the state and the legal environment. So, you know, it's a problematic part. You know, we can't sit here and make law for the department not doing their work. If the law says it must be done, then it must be done. And, but what happens if it doesn't happen? And I remember when I started on that report, the many claims and cases with land claims where the department came and didn't do their work, and the legal fraternity got so tired of the department not doing their work. But what is the solution for that thing?
If this family, which is indicted legally because we failed to provide information, happened to get a very good lawyer with a good attitude, he can actually take the department to the dinner, where you go to get land to give this person and build them their house. Because you fail to give information that would have helped to save the house that the person is taking. So it opens a window of litigations against this person. So we need to be very careful with this and actually take a decision in this meeting that may on a quarterly basis we need to get a report about this issue. What is the progress? How many did you get this, you know? And then how many reports did you provide when they were needed? I think it will help us actually to as a monitoring tool to check if we are really coming back.
Chair, thanks. I am not so sure about our progress in relation to the whole meeting, Chair. I may advise all of us, including myself, that we probably less than an hour from the end of meeting time, and we may wish to really be very selective on the battles we fight or the issues we want to pick up, and also remind all of us that perhaps it's in our best interest if we were to reserve the issues of debate to when the committee sits to debate them. Otherwise, it could be nice to get the legal gurus to just answer us insofar as they give us ammunition. But now, Chair, not to shy away from the discussion now on the floor, the inalienable right of a person not to be victimized can never be made to be a consequence of the departmental performance or otherwise. I hope the legal minds will read my mind very, very well. The inalienable right of anyone not to be victimized willingly cannot really be made to be a subject of a departmental performance or otherwise. In the similar manner where people's rights are protected, especially those of Chapter 2, it is immaterial that a social worker has come or not come, or what the relationship is between the number of social workers and the populace, or a district surgeon and the populace, or a district surgeon in the sense of health, where the right either of the deceased or otherwise or of a potential beneficiary of a social grant. I'm just saying, Chair, we can never be seen, but in our debate, I will request to come back strongly to argue that probation officer or no probation officer, nobody could be seen to have been fairly evicted without that report. I mean, or good defense departmental performance should be taken out of the equation, and the principle be there that no one is willing. I have on my emails and my portals pictures of eviction orders that the people saw for the first time that I'm being evicted. And people speaking Zulu being evicted with an African order, to make an example. And it's very rare where it's very rare for I would really take exception when I make a humble contribution, and that's the name, a mammary when I'm speaking on behalf of people as a representative, and forwarding evidence to committee and to anyone, including the media and whoever else. That these are the experiences, and therefore, Chair, in the point under discussion, I think that when it is debated, when the committee discusses, and when we go back to the House, I really advise Afran that I'll be very firm on my own part to say that you cannot say when, because there's no probation officer. So, mawambo mnyambo. I think we all know vernacular. Let us say that. So willy-nilly, and to the gallows, it would be grossly unfair. It would be grossly unfair. I'll argue that point later, Chair. I think that the legal team, from where I sit, they've advised sufficiently on it, but I would respect that other members would still be seeking clarity on it. But insofar as it is a point of debate, I think the stance is very, very clear. We cannot allow people to victimize the union.
Intervention, the system was released from prison. Now he is people lost cases in court. They were injured. And their houses were demolished. And the eviction and the court did not even follow procedure. So, what does it say to us? I'm talking now about the legal department and land rights management facility. Why are we not going to these cases, look at them, and then try to restore justice that were denied to these people over many years since the exile? Because there are a lot of people who contract in the exile and nothing happens. So all laws are equal. Anyone who breaks the law is committing a crime. There is no lesser crime. I think you understand what I'm saying. Isn't there a window of opportunity that is opening for us to get justice done to those who are giving justice?
I must be sitting in a blind spot of yours. Maybe I'm not putting up my hand as vigorously as normal.
It's the point I wanted to make the following is that Dr. Bachelet itself is a very strong project. Our government believes in equality of all South Africans. Now, I'm not sure what that memo gets. But our government strongly believes in equality of all South Africans. I observed in a very audible way when the Honorable Chong arrived, how he was welcomed here. Unless we are not sure who has arrived, you know. I did not observe the same thing when the volunteers arrived. You know. Maybe we are mistaken by the attire. But he deserves a welcome.
But yeah.
Welcome back.
What is this supposed to mean?
We miss you. Since you came off the bench, you are welcome.
The
now, Chair, well, I just wanted to say that on that issue, I agree with the Honorable Mbuli. But there's no justification. There's no if. If the law is breached, you know, people must be treated in the right way. But in any case, in relation to recourse, if the department is actually not doing its job, there's nothing that stops the court in stopping it. So I just wanted to say that, but I'm not taking anything away from what the Honorable was saying. So there's a point here which I think is critical. But because of the critical nature of this point, I would really respectfully want to delegate this point to be made by my principal. And I'm delegating upwards. Over to you, Mr.
Think that you give me right now, just as I get to serve. But it's okay, I take it as an ambush. That is the
fitting way to send me off. I think the Deputy Minister will be pleased that this might be my last appearance for the committee and for him it would be a good reason.
Exactly.
But he may not be able to meet at this platform. I hope we'll be able to meet at a different platform.
Point of order in the house.
So it'll be business as usual. Look, Honorable Chair, I think, and I want to believe, that the entire purpose of and the intent of the review process of the first amendment is to find workable solution and to provide permanent mechanism for coexistence between farm owners and the farm workers, who are often referred to as dwellers. And if that is the purpose, and if that is the intent of the review process, I would guess that the portfolio committee should be departing from that, and whatever that we do should be geared towards the realization of such. And in this case, having read the comments of various stakeholders and their submission, again, foreground this point which I'm about to do. I'm pleased that certain definitions will be looked at and be replaced with appropriate definitions, so that this intent is realized in the foreseeable that there is peaceful coexistence between farm owners and farm workers within the current framework. The framework which makes provision for those with inalienable rights to claim ownership of land, and those whose inalienable right is in question. So, within that framework, we need to work towards finding permanent solution for peaceful coexistence. And if that is to be realized, I would propose, and I don't know if that would be considered going forward, that in the bill, and once it's ascended into an act, we must insert what in legal terms, especially borrowed from the French jurisprudence, which is called force majeure, be inserted in the amended bill. And if force majeure is inserted, force majeure is a legal principle that says parties involved in a contract or in an agreement shall waiver their right to their obligation, to fulfill their obligation in the event of the occurrence of one unforeseeable, unavoidable, and external factor that renders the relationship impossible, and that will relieve such parties from carrying out their obligation. And what are those circumstances? One, a natural event or political and events of a special nature. What are these natural events? Earthquakes, floods, flux and exophot. And what are theological and special events? Terrorism, riots, civil wars, and other social disturbances, including wars. That we must insert in the amendment B, force majeure. That eviction will only occur under these circumstances. And if these circumstances do not occur, there shouldn't be any eviction. That's my submission for now. And I'll retreat and go and talk to my sister. That will be my submission, and I'll go ahead, I'll retreat and go and talk to myself. Well, if this was to be inserted, would that not provide some form of relief, some form of permanent solution to facilitate peaceful and coexistence between these two? And for that, I rest my case.
Chairperson, I think we are moving into the debating of the actual clause of it. I would actually prefer to reserve my comments before we go to the bill clause by clause. Otherwise, we're going to unnecessarily prolong the meeting. Voice was also the head before the election for him. And we said that
very good they work with our structures on the ground. They didn't represent us as a central power. During research, we knew they were coming. We worked with them set out on the ground because they were structures. That's why we are establishing the things we are using the past. Our own experience. We were very, very always there on the ground. We wanted to create the space for parliamentarians to go there and work and find out from this gender commission policies. Because the question you were raising was one of them. How are you going to ensure that this people is here? Instead of the approaching continental population level. We want these land rights commission policies to be inclusive of municipalities, farmers, and all of these so that if there is a diction that is justifiable in law, that the municipality would make available accommodation before the diction is executed. And therefore, this would be the people who would be interacting, bringing this legal, those are the legal, what we call this, the legal, those structures of the paralegal. This is what we want. So the land rights commission committees on the ground of the municipalities, farmers, and farmers. So that when there is a problem, sometimes eviction is necessary. Because if someone is force majeure included, if there is a need to repair someone, these are the structures that must be considered. So that we do so. The other day, a young fellow said, he was from the farm worker and Jason is at the same farm. He's hunting them. He hunts the game. And then second time he ran home and when he was chased by the owner of the game farm, he hanged himself. You see, he's a young fellow. But he hanged himself. He didn't even, he wasn't killed by the farm. But he ran away, went home, hanged himself. His parents just walked in and boy is dead. So these are the things that we look at that are you know helping us understand the dynamics there. So I'm saying, Chair, that I'm very pleased that the honourable members are focusing on this so that we can all say, okay, the Land Rights Management Board, our committees will start this purpose on that point. For MDs as well. Two, we are in the process of employing a senior manager, the chief director, with a court order on the case of the now assistant. We are busy finalizing that appointment. This person is going to help us with the probation reports that the honorable has raised. And I'm very pleased that this matter again has finally. Chair, you made an important point. No. First of all, the home. Out of home is going as well. If you look at the constructive interdictions, this is very right. What we're trying to do with this law is say occupiers do not appear to exceed the access to this new resolution. This committee, then Rights Management Committee, has met or has said to take it. Just remember that. In South Africa, and of course this came with the question proper, in South Africa, basic human rights are just issues. So you can't deny people water, in terms of this thing, water, grazing, livestock, and so on, basic human rights. If they're just issues, they say the problem is that we don't know when that happened until after the fact. If we have this Land Rights Management Committee, this is where we want to make sure that we monitor. And therefore, we have to explain it in this case. Not just the point of this case. The point you made, Deputy Chair, which is very important, to talk about overcomplication of legislation, legislating. High is a good example. High X is a problem in terms of legislation. We agree that the party wants to show the matter of mouth, the penance of
process. Because now 48 hours, within 48 hours, if you don't intervene within 48 hours, who has whatever in 1 month? People build beautiful houses. You can't destroy those houses. But you can put them down if you use. But now we are also trying to sort out things because 48 hours have passed, people build officials not on the ground. Thank you. We just thought that we were sharing that, that information. I thought it was good. Thank you for giving us that.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Can you just reserve our discussion for the next opportunity? Just say as the what we have been saying, we are not the response from the department. When we go through this report as a committee, then you are next to me and you just add it to some discussion. Yeah, after the commencement of the act.
possibility of force majeure. I think the economist to make a point that the owner-occupier relationship is basically contractual in the sense that it's based on consent of the owner. And force majeure normally is used as a defense in instances where there's failure to perform on the part of one of the parties. It could arise, if I was struggling to understand the context between the two, it might arise in instances where, for instance, the owner wants to terminate the relationship with the occupier on the basis that the occupier failed to perform according to the agreement. And the occupier may raise personal arrest to say it was because of an act of God, something beyond my control, that couldn't perform. It could be used in that sense as a defense to an allegation of not performing according to the contract. I think we have to continue with the comment. It takes us to planning. Comments. The first one being that the bill does not create an obligation about discrimination for those who did that. It is correct that the provision for this accommodation is not an obligation. The right to form, but it's not an obligation. It's not that one. We're paying for that.
That's why I'm here. I keep on contributing to this guy. I tell them one thing, they do something else. Are you saying it in my presence? That's exactly what was correcting from day 7. There's 2 points. I was correcting that. I said, I've written that. That you guys are making me not believe it. Because I'm telling you guys, you say the right thing for each other. I mean, this bill, because this is a bill that is initiated politically. Now, the technical guys must do what we ask them to do. That's the leading one of them. Please. This is the point of the to page 7. I said here, no eviction must occur until alternative accommodation. I've corrected those things. I said here, provision of alternative accommodation, I said here, and the municipality is the reason the lender has to leave. Which one? When we constructed this thing, we went through a lot of discussion. They tend to change it. It says here, I've written here, deleted, however, it is not a prerequisite. I've written here, this is one of the critical aspects of this bill. Deleted this thing that says, however, it is not a prerequisite. And on the second one, that's what I was saying, the bill seeks to correct this situation. And I said, in South Africa, in the sense of South Africa's constitution, basic human rights are just secure. So you can't deny people water, all of these basic human rights. So we want to make sure that those 2 points are strengthened in the bill to avoid this constructive eviction of our people. By denying that. This is the same what's happening in the Northwest. In the Northwest, I went to a farm there, and we are in court as we speak on this matter of constructive evictions. So it cannot be that it is not a prerequisite when it is, in fact, one of the fundamental reasons why we amended this thing. It is me who charged this thing, it's not officials. So I know what I want to see. exactly the point. I want them to do the things you ask them to do. Even when I've just spoken in terms of the sermon. Normally when a kid is removed,
basically that's the kind of relationship that maybe at the practical level, the department may have with the police to say, in terms of monetary resources, these are going to be cooperated to ensure that the police, because the affairs in the public, there's been a lot of stories that we had about the police instead of assisting assisting with a lawful eviction, where they bring people without proper, where people have been evicted when they go to the police, but then they're not being assisted. The point I'm making, when I'm sure, is that it's practically not going to be able to provide for what they must receive from impact, because the only thing is that it's maybe a question of cooperation between the city and the shore, that if the city is there is some kind of an arrangement in terms of how to do it. The next point they're making is that the section 8.3, which we spoke about earlier, we talked about the termination of employment relationship, which leads for eviction orders. They're saying that the court that hears an eviction application must have proof that the occupier was aware that the employment relationship was continued. There was an instance where, for instance, they say that because there was measure tourism on the purpose of the CMA as an indicator. While the CMA is still operating on the labor issue, the eviction continues. Now they're saying that it must be the court that hears the eviction application must be furnished with proof that the occupier who has been evicted on the basis of the termination of the employment relationship must have provided proof that he was indeed aware that when he settled the matter definitively, he was agreed or understanding that that would be followed by eviction order on the part of the owner. The next point deals with provision default to a fair to close. The next one deals with change of accommodation. That is the clarified by the minister. Now, this is a commission for gender equality. They just made two things. One, from the condition they made, the issues that they sent to the bill, and those two that should be taken. They are making the general statement that enforcement in the act appears to be weak with regard to local convictions, and they are taken to face the threat that the event takes part in the gender equality. I'm making the point that a lot of enforcement of the act we could rely on the LAPS. But as I said, it's an issue that the department can enter into some kind of arrangement in terms of how best to provide for that. As for the disaggregation of information that the lengthy court deals with, it's not a matter that we can provide for in the act on the something that will be arranged outside the legislative framework. Our way to, I think if they will need the fines that they are asking for more time, I think they will directly that the fines will be Tau is committing again on the definition of family, tenure grants, and the point that they said they were not contracted by the department. So they are not speaking directly for the conditions of the department. For Naru,
there is
who was not consulted by the department, but the divisions of the body. The answer is organized agriculture is one of the stakeholders consulted by the board. And that's the same, the DAU was consulted or not consulted. Now, were they consulted or were they not consulted? Because if it doesn't look like the concern is being answered.
Also on page 5, opposed to the provision that is in the bill that talks to weather conditions when divisions occur. We have obtained that they don't believe those provisions are necessary. We believe that they are necessary. Next is the Department of Operational Governance. The submission is there's a number of things that converted that way to the bill in the act. It meant on Seneca that there must be closer coordination between the parish and the municipality with the allocation of Seneca. Since we allocate some funds in the in the way the supported provisions of the bill. As the SA, the commercial and the definition of families, we should deal with. They're also making the point around China grants that they must be able to spend, we spoke about that. Maintenance of dwellings, we spoke about it, but they're making the point that maintenance should not include expansion of families. And it's understandable as owner that we will not be in expansion of families. On the premises. On the other hand, the occupiers are saying where family grow and the working on the farm, there may be a need for some kind of accommodation. They also talk about representation. Like I said, they're opposing the position with regard to that representation. And maybe we are making the point also in our comments that the right to legal representation is not the way it's framed in the bill, it's not that absolute. When for instance in an instance where the person waives the right, there doesn't have to be legal representation. For instance, where we are saying where the court, for instance, is that it will not be, or it will not harm the interest of justice if a person possesses legal representation. That needs to be done. So I think it's a right that is well guaranteed in the manner that is provided for in the bill. AFRA, definition of family independence is well defined. Senior grants, they're saying it is not clear. provided the opportunity. This is a fact that it is not provided for this people in the act. The witness condition is something that the committee can deliberate on and then advise. Then further, they are also making the point around saying that in other places. And I'm saying the student has provided. And then last evening said these are the general comments that we think that we'll be doing around the country. I did not see those that we have to under raised by other organizations as well. Some you will see we address them again. For instance, with regard to the issue of where the main occupier lies, we dealt with that in terms of the child mathematics. There is an issue of payment of rights by occupiers. We are not dealing with it in the bill, not in the act. It's not an easy one to deal with, but it talks to the conditions under which the occupiers find themselves on the farm. It also talks to the issue of consent. Like I said, the relationship is contractual between the owner and the occupier. It's based on consent of the owner. Now, if the contract or the agreement is that that consent is beyond condition that the occupier pays rent, the occupier has agreed to that, and can decide when for instance negotiations break down around the issue of rent or the owner is not occupier is no longer able to pay rent, or when there's a change of ownership, maybe the new owner of the farm increases rent, it's an issue that there is. I'm not sure how that should be determined. The other point that was raised is people said strongly that there must be a moratorium on eviction pending parliament processing this legislation. We are making the point that the minister has no authority to declare a moratorium, because he cannot declare EFSA in operation pending an amendment in the bill. That's the legal issue. No eviction was okay until the change of communication is arranged. The minister has clarified that. The issue of contracting eviction rights, where progressively occupiers have not access to amenities, to water, electricity. Yes. Yeah. I hear from the minister dealt with this to a certain extent. The issue of ownership change, we dealt with that. Occupiers over the age of 60, we dealt with that. The distinction between tenure rights and labor relations rights, we dealt with that when we dealt with the evictions based on determination of the employment relationship. For this to not stop evictions, even when they are reported to them as a result of unlawful evictions, will be referred to that issue. Occupiers, some occupiers not allowed to bury their dead on the farms, the tax provides for that. If you look at section 6.2, the one that the minister last point on page 7 is very much important. Where do we say outside the task force? Where do we say that there must be some kind of servitude by the state, if you like, on the dwelling establishment on the farm for the state to be able to provide services free. I'm saying it's important because the minister also spoke about it in the last meeting, I think last week or so. It also talks to the issue of on-site establishment, where, for instance, there is an attempt to build, make Kenya more secure. The act, as it is, provides for expropriation by the minister of land in terms of land, but that must happen in terms of the Expropriation Act. I think the minister made a point that government is awaiting the finalization of the expropriation, the new Expropriation Act, and then see how to proceed with that. But it's important is to make a point that the issue that the community has raised with regard to servitude, the state having more control on the buildings with a good property, is something that should be looked at between the two. That, Madam Chair, concludes the session. Basically, we refer to the issue of
thank you very much for the detailed response. I think we also tried to clarify some of the, simplify some of the messages in the act. Each of them are going to have something to say before they have decided to be part of it. Ms. Boyo.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I noticed some of the issues which were also raised at the stakeholder relations in which you tried to provide answers. They were not mainly after the amendment. The issue, for instance, on the provisions of the Act is in Section 23, the access to funds that was raised. In Section 23.2, the
document
comes from the department. Yes. Sorry, Chair, I was really just talking on the general one. This, we had this discussion in 6B alternative study. The other issues which are raised were issues which are not specifically amended, like the question that was raised on the functional call center, that's all I was trying to make.
Provide us with a response, because there was an indication that the toll-free number was not functioning for almost 12.
Was it 12 months? They said 3 months.
3 months.
Yes. Chair, we checked that, and I thought that you wanted to give your report. Just generally to say that the call center is operated from the call center is a Telkom call center. The period of time that I was able to verify when the call center was not working for an extended period of time was given to me the 22nd February to the 18th of April. Other than that, it's been on and off when we have had problems with the with Telkom land, court on the family. And the other one was really just to report that it is in the principal act that officers of the state and other people and ministers are not, it's not allowed. It's section 23.2. You cannot be prevented from accessing. They are just confirming it because it's a different from accessing funds, yes. And in addition to that, there is the issue of freedom of association and information and all that. So I wasn't going to the actual numbers. I was just talking to the commissioner general. And there were others, which the minister for instance raised on the issue of settlement and the discussion that we had on which he already said he wanted to prepare a response.
Thank you very much, Victoria. Honourable member, we're looking at time. I indicated initially that I will allow a presentation on the issues that have been raised by the stakeholders in the public. But next week we're going to have another meeting. Can I allow members to go through this document in the responses and prepare themselves for next week meeting? We'll try to have the parliamentary legal advisor to be here. The department legal advisor also must be here. And also our state law advisor must be here. So that next week when we at the committee and as we wanted to be there here to advise before we reach the last stage where we'll be going to close by close of the thing. I think that will be done in our first meeting when we come back after Christmas. So now after interesting when traveling is fighting with me, that's it. You won't be able to come here after Christmas, after New Year. I'm sorry, Honorable Chabele, to interfere with your holiday. So can we agree then that we just leave it here? Members must go through this report and responses ourselves for next week, whereby we'll be discussing in detail now at the committee. Honorable Christian, if you want to please.
Yes, please. Chair, tell me again, communities and institutions in South Africa appeal to the public protector. I want to suggest that we invite the public protector to give us their institutions their view on this bill. We're dealing here with 3 million people, and we've had quite a lot of information as we went around the country. I don't think I really need to motivate much. But I think their input, you know, here would really guide us and obviate the situation where there could be further complaints, you know, in this context. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I just wanted to know if the SAPS will be coming back and doing a presentation of the last year. Will they be back this year or will they be back in the new year? Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Robertson Kamadi. And on the point by Honourable Pizane, I agree with him earlier on. I think he can at least understand what I'm talking now. There are so many Chapter 9 institutions. And if we want to deal with them, they are called Chapter 9 because they serve kind of a similar purpose and are related. For example, the Human Rights Commission and so on. So based on that, Chair, I think that it may not be possible without undue delay to the Department of State to really listen to them and that after all, the main stakeholder of the people has been heard, and the representative of the farmer groups. And propose that we are not able to listen to the public protector, and the process has been open enough. If the office of the public protector had anything to, they could have indicated to our support, President. I suggest we're not able to continue in that way. Otherwise, the list becomes endless. Thank you.
Is that how many periods are outstanding now? Officials are now pushing us for us to do diligent work. Now, I foresee I've raised that when we started, they told us their aim for us to pass the situation. Now we're sharing that we are on their side. Now, we are not going to be effective oversight in a sense that if we call public protector, it's fine for us because we want to make sure routines or amend or engage. We must know different stakeholders to come and give us information. And I said, look, I would like to support from Mr. Look, let's call him and find out. And let's even call SAS, ASAP, as can assure. Thank you, Chair. We cannot, in other words, we cannot just process later because it must be done. We must call different stakeholders and take it from there.
Honorable Member, I think we must not make our way to the committee. We've called different stakeholders to come before the committee and make presentations. That is what we've done. I think what Honorable Member Robinson is asking only SAPS when we had some problems last week. I think that is supported because they promised that they are going to gather that information on the cases on farm eviction and come back to the committee. But I think I've made a mistake of not indicating before we started the meeting my apology for that. That they forwarded an apology to the committee secretary, that they are still compiling that report because they have to get reports from different problems. So that is what you are waiting for. So if they are ready, because they said they will come next week, not sure whether that report will be ready. If it will, or they have requested for 2 weeks, and 2 weeks' time will be out of parliament. So we can give them space on our first meeting before we start. We don't think that their presentation will make that any impact on the amendment of the bill. But we want to hear what is it that they are doing. As we have indicated to the responses of the department that they can't dictate to them what to do. They know what to do. So we want to hear from them. Although they have told us that they have nothing to do with the eviction. So we have contacted stakeholders. If time permits, we can call the public. There's nothing that we're afraid of. Because if there's something that has been reported on farm eviction, the public protector, the public is reporting to some cases to her. So if she can come, there's nothing that we're afraid of, and present what she wants to present. But I heard that the public protector has a lot of things to do. We've got a lot of things to do also in the committee. But can call whatever, but we've conducted intensive stakeholder engagement.
That I think maybe the word stakeholders confused the department. I think what's been suggested is that we make sure that there's due diligence also from other agencies of the state. I think that's more I interpret it. But as you said, I think that's maybe like late in the process we can work that into a program to get other opinions in it. So I'm quite happy to support your proposal that you close now that you're prepared. realized that you had a very difficult meeting over the weekend, so much time.
That's back to you now. Yeah, we can say that you don't invite the public protector on the human rights commission chapter. All the public chapter 9 institutions may fulfill. They can give us any information about family admissions. We can invite them in house before the conference. Honourable members can agree that next week we look at this responses from the department. We'll discuss the responses, come with our own proposals or amendments. The other stakeholders will be given that when we come back. Thank you very much for making this happen.
Please, Matthias, we don't agree with the effort to redeploy you away from us. Maybe they see you defending us, but as a commissar,
you are the one who reported us.
No, I'm not only with Mata, and I told him you will work well with him. No, you must take him, Mata, to this to the commander in chief.